Good morning, and welcome to the Monday, April 4th, 2022 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, will you please take the role of the members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Present.
Representative Sandstedt?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett is excused. Representative Daniels?
Daniels present.
Representative Damith?
Present.
Representative Drewkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller present.
Representative Richardson? Representative Richardson? Representative Thompson? Representative Thompson? Representative Walgamott? Representative Walgamott? Representative Shung? Representative Shung? Representative Joaquin?
Present.
Mr. Chair, report, we have quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Members, today we start the process of reviewing the Education Finance Supplemental Budget Omnibus from the House majority. I want to begin by thanking partisan and nonpartisan staff who've worked exhausting hours pulling this bill together. As always, I'm grateful for their insights, their commitment, and their professionalism. We'll start by doing a walkthrough of the fiscal spreadsheet with Ms. and then walk through the language contained in the delete all amendment. Representative Kreisha, a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Our intent is to do the walkthroughs, allow for public testimony so that members get the richest perspective and depth of knowledge on the bill and then move to member questions. Is that acceptable?
Yes, that should be acceptable. Can I ask a couple questions on the process and where we're going? So, Mr. Chair, your intentions today, we saw this bill released, I believe, at 11:40 last night, so still a lot of time to digest. You're going to do the presentation, the walkthrough, and then do you anticipate member questions today?
I'm not expecting members' questions today because I'm wanting to give members full opportunity to understand the bill themselves and get multiple perspectives by allowing for public testimony first and then likely hold member questions until tomorrow.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and then a couple more questions. And then, so let's confirm our amendment deadline.
I'll say something and then Ms. Burt will correct me if I'm wrong. Amendment deadline is 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, April 5th.
Okay. And then just my final question as I'm trying to understand all this. Mr. Chair, you have numbers in here, some of that. Is this your target, or is there another number we could see?
The bill balances against the target. The House majority is willing to invest $1,155,000,000 in fiscal year 23. That includes the voluntary pre-kindergarten $155 million investment, expanding that program and those opportunities for four-year-olds in the state, and then continue those investments into the next fiscal biennium, fiscal years 24 and 25, with a target of $2,125,000,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just the last thing for the staff, and I haven't seen them yet, but will we have district runs and will all that be available?
Mr. Strom, I'm going to throw that one to you.
Mr. Chair, members, the majority of the funding is going to be in special education, and we're going to want to coordinate with MDE to make sure that we have the most up-to-date information for those. So before any district-by-district printouts are released, we'll need new information from MDE. I'm hoping that we'll have district-by-district runs for you, but at this point in time, they're not ready to go.
Representative Kreisha?
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Strom. So there's a possibility, as you're trying to coordinate all of this, that we may not have district runs by Wednesday when the bill is slated to come out of committee. Just checking, is that correct, Mr. Strom, and with your staff?
Mr. Strom, can you help us?
Chair, Representative Kreisha, yes, that's correct. I'm hopeful that you'll have those before Wednesday, but I'm reluctant to provide my usual certainty with that just because of the reliance on the special ed data that we'll need.
Okay, understood. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Go ahead and, you know, we'll proceed with your timeline.
All right, thank you very much, I appreciate it. So members, to review, we'll possibly have a little bit of testimony this morning after the walkthrough of the fiscal spreadsheet and the language of the bill. Tomorrow, Tuesday's hearing will be devoted to public testimony and member questions. For members of the public who are watching, you can find the instructions on our committee webpage on how to sign up for testimony. Wednesday, we'll mark up the bill during our regular time slot, and if we need additional time, we'll reconvene during our regular committee time Thursday morning. Amendments to the delete all amendment are due to Ms. Burt by 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday. With that, I would like to hand the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Sandsteed. Vice Chair Sandsteed?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Before we do that, can we take care of minutes?
Oh, could I move the minutes?
You may move the minutes, Representative Dabney.
I'd like to move the minutes from our, let's make sure I get it right if I'm going to do it. Friday, April 1st, meeting of the committee, please.
Excellent. The minutes are moved before the committee. Any discussion? Members, this is a voice vote. Please unmute yourselves. All in favor of approving the minutes from Friday, April 1st, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Dabney, we will start with your DE. We will move that before the committee.
Chair Sansa, we're not moving anything before
the committee. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Sarah. Okay, Representative Dabney, to your DE.
Madam Chair, thank you for that. Madam Chair and members, this is the product of listening to Minnesota for the last several months and well before that. This is a bill that was built from the ground up by hearing the voices of students and families, teachers and school staff, and locally elected school board members. It goes to the three R's of education: relevant curriculum, resources for schools, and relationships for students. I hope that as nonpartisan staff walks us through, you see the investments that we are willing to make, because we believe that every child in Minnesota should have access to the world-class education that we have the resources to provide, and that we are willing to step into our responsibility as the legislature to stabilize schools so that they can best provide Minnesota a future where everyone can thrive. With that, Madam Chair, I'd ask you to call on fiscal staff to walk through the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. It looks like we have Solveig Beckel, and I would like you to go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. I'm going to share my screen now. Okay, so this spreadsheet is one of three that are available in your packets. This one shows only the House position, so only the impacts of House File 4300 DE1. I'm going to start on line 7. The House proposes funding access to menstrual products via operating capital revenue. That increase would be $1.738 million in fiscal year 23 and $3.906 million in the TAILS. Line 8, the House recommends compensatory revenue adjustment of $5 million in fiscal year 2023 only. Line 9, the House recommends declining enrollment aid of $25 million in fiscal year 2023 only. Line 10, the House proposes English learner cross-subsidy aid in the amount of 40% of the cross-subsidy in 23 at $76.112 million, 50% in fiscal year 24 at $83.376 million, and 75% in fiscal year 25 at $119 million, roughly. In fiscal year 2026 and beyond, they propose funding the cross-subsidy at 100%. Line 11, expanding access to online learning for BIE schools has a cost of $3,000 per year. Line 12, the extended time revenue for students in summer residential programs increase would be $900,000 in fiscal year 23 and $2 million in the TAILS. Line 13, the kindergarten ADM for children with disabilities adjustment would be $70,000 in fiscal year 23 and $154,000 in the TAILS. The levy equalization cost to offset the various levies, primarily those for the voluntary pre-kindergarten program, but a few others, would be $31.99 million in fiscal year 23 and $43.856 million in the TAILS. The provision of special instruction increasing that age to age 22, the House recommends funding in fiscal year 23 only at $3.661 million. Line 16, the VPK, the voluntary pre-kindergarten, for eligible four-year-olds would have a general education cost of $67.366 million in 23 and $193.454 million in the TAILS. As we go through the spreadsheet, you'll see various other interactions for funding the VPK program. Line 17, the transportation sparsity aid, the House recommends funding it at $4.27 million in fiscal year 23 and $8.219 million in the TAILS. Moving down to the other general education programs, line 21, the House proposes increased career and technical transportation aid at $143,000 in fiscal year 23 and $1.813 million in the TAILS. Line 22, the House proposes funding the consolidation transition aid increase at $810,000 in fiscal year 23 and then $90,000 in fiscal year 24 with a base of zero in 25. Line 23, due to funding the English learner cross-subsidy aid on line 10 here, the House recommends reducing the previous session law's increase of $2 million. So the decrease would be $2 million per year, and that's just through 25. Line 24, the non-public pupil education aid. This is for counselors for elementary and middle school students in non-public schools. The House recommends $1.677 million in fiscal year 23 and $4.032 million in fiscal year, or in fiscal years 24 and 25. Okay, moving down to Article 2, Education Excellence. Line 30, I apologize, that should say VPK. So for voluntary pre-kindergarten achievement and integration aid, the House recommends funding of $1.135 million in fiscal year 23 and $2.98 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. Line 31, The House proposes spending of $25 million for after-school program grants in fiscal year 23, and these funds are available through fiscal year 25. Line 32, the House recommends American Indian Education Aid increases of $3.12 million in fiscal year 23 and $7.06 million in the tails. Line 33, the House has a bold literacy package that comes in with totals at $4.75 million per year. And then those funds are broken out amongst letters, a literacy unit at MDE, data collection, and then state library services. Line 38, again, voluntary pre-kindergarten, the interaction with the charter lease. This has a cost of $1.116 million in fiscal year 23 and $2.985 million in the tails. Line 39, closing educational opportunity grants, GAPS grants. The House proposes $5 million per year. Line 40, the computer science blueprint. The House proposes $20,000 per year. Line 41, the college in schools increase. The House proposes $5 million in fiscal year 23, $4 million in 24, and $5 million in 25. Culturally specific learning opportunities, the House recommends funding that at $5 million per year. Line 43, ethnic studies implementation. The House recommends funding this at $576,000 in the first year and $925,000 in the tails. The grants associated with this program, the House proposes funding at $500,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25. Line 45, expanding rigorous coursework. The House recommends $5 million per year. Line 46, full service community schools. The House funds this at $50 million in fiscal year 23, and these funds are available through the end of fiscal year 25. The House also sets the fiscal year 2026 base at $20 million per year. For line 47, the House funds the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs STARS chapter at $45,000 in fiscal year 23. This is also available through fiscal year 25. Line 48, the House recommends increasing the Minnesota Council on Economic Education's funding by $150,000 in every year. Line 49, the House recommends funding the Minnesota Math Corps program, increasing their funding by $500,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25. Line 50 shows the House's multi-tiered systems of support proposal. This has a total cost of $21.25 million in the first year, and then $21.62 million from there on. The various items that are included in this proposal include funding for the regional centers and service cooperatives, funding for districts, charters, and co-ops, funding again for letters, line 54 for building assets, reducing risks, the center, for line 55, the tribal state relations and statewide implementation of MTSS, and finally, line 56, an appropriation for the U of M Center of Applied Research and Educational Improvement. Line 57, the Network for Children of African Descent. This has an appropriation of $1 million in fiscal year 23, and this is available until the end of fiscal year 25. Line 58, the House has an appropriation for Tribal Contract Schools Counseling. This goes along with the non-public school counseling, and the House funds this at $86,000 in fiscal year 23 and $190,000 in the tails. Finishing up education excellence, line 59 shows wilderness inquiry. The House recommends funding this at $494,000 per year. Moving on to Article 3, teachers. Line 63, the VPK interaction with the QCOM alternative teachers is $781,000 in fiscal year 23 and $2.133 million in the TAILS. Line 64, the House recommends American Indian history and culture relicensure requirements, which will have costs of $86,000 in fiscal year 24 and $60,000 in 25. Line 65, the aspiring teacher retention bonuses, the House proposes funding these at $11.25 million in fiscal year 23, and these are available through fiscal year 25. Line 66, concurrent enrollment teacher partnership, the House recommends increasing that funding from $375,000 per year to $1 million per year, and the increase is $625,000 per year. Line 67, the House recommends increasing CUGMEC, or Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color, funding by $2 million in each year. Line 68, expanding concurrent enrollment, the intro to teaching, so this is for high school students. The House recommends funding this at $500,000 per year. Line 69, the House recommends increasing Grow Your Own funding. This funding would be for transfer to the special, for a transfer to a special revenue account. The House recommends funding this at $61.5 million in fiscal year 23. Let's see, line 70. The Minnesota Science Teachers Association received $611,000 in fiscal year 23 only. Line 71, the House recommends $5 million per year for non-exclusionary discipline training. Line 72, the House recommends funding for the special education due process prep time. You'll see this also on line 73. So these are part of the same proposal. So the House recommends funding this at $18.23 million in fiscal year 2023. This is for, special education teachers due process time. And then the House recommends funding this at roughly $40 to $43 million in the TAILS. Moving on to special education, line 77, we saw this proposal earlier in the spreadsheet. This is just the interaction with special education as compared to Gen Ed. So the provision of special instruction for increasing the age to 22 for fiscal year 2023 only will have a cost of $21,000 in fiscal year 24 only. Line 78, voluntary pre-kindergarten for four-year-olds, the special education interaction is $1.128 million in fiscal year 23. And $8.378 million in the TAILS. Line 79, the Registry of Interpreters for the Deaf certification for deaf interpreters in schools will have costs of $275,000 in fiscal year 24 and $305,000 in fiscal year 25. Line 80, the House recommends reducing the special education cross-subsidy in fiscal year 23 by $422.47 million and by $997.092 million in the TAILS. Line 81, the House recommends shifting the special education programming back to the 90-10 shift instead of the 87.66 and 12.34% shift. This will have a cost of $44.569 million in fiscal year 23. Line 82, the House recommends training for paraprofessionals funded at $20.352 million in fiscal year 23 and $42.242 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. Moving down to the facilities, line 86, the House recommends increasing long-term facilities maintenance aid by $7.2 million in each year of the TAILS. Line 87, voluntary pre-kindergarten. This is the interaction with the long-term facilities maintenance aid. This will be funded at $1.144 million in fiscal year 23 and $2.924 million and the tails. Moving down to health and safety, the House recommends on line 91 funding for level 4 mental health innovative grants. The House proposes $9 million in each year. Line 92, the House proposes funding for mental health leads at the Department of Education. The funding would be $226,000 in fiscal year 23 and $602,000 in the tails. Line 93, the House recommends student support personnel aid. So this would be for counselors, nurses, etc. The House recommends funding this at $95.862 million in fiscal year 23 and $212.295 million in the tails. Along with this proposal, the House includes on line 94 a student support personnel workforce pipeline to develop more of these student support personnel. And this would be a transfer to the special revenue account. The House recommends funding this item at $9 million in fiscal year 23 and $1.5 million in each year of the tails. Moving down to nutrition, the voluntary pre-kindergarten interactions with breakfast and lunch are on lines 98 and 99. For breakfast, that interaction would be $462,000 in fiscal year 23 and $1.279 million in the tails. For lunch, it would be $210,000 in fiscal year 23 and $559,000 in the tails. The House also recommends on line 100 school meals aid of $18.546 million in fiscal year 23 and $27.938 million in the tails. Moving down to libraries, on line 104, the House recommends increasing the regional libraries funding at $1.8 million in fiscal year 23 and $4 million in the tails. Next, we come down to provisions that, because of the formula structure, are in the Ed Finance budget, but were approved by the Education, or were approved by the Early Childhood Committee and sent to this committee. So line 114, there is developmental screening for voluntary pre-K. That is $977,000 in fiscal year 23. And $2.09 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. On line 115, I show the reallocation of pre-existing Pathway 2 funding. So this tracks as savings to this item to fit within the full voluntary pre-kindergarten $155 million in fiscal year 23 and $370 million in fiscal years 24 and 25 proposal. Line 116, voluntary pre-kindergarten through mixed delivery. This is funded at $96.92 million in fiscal year 23 and $193.84 million in fiscal years 24 and 25. And you can see on lines 117, 118, and 119, that this funding is broken out as funding for Head Start, Licensed Center, and Family Child Care Providers, and administration of the distribution of these funds. There are no changes in community education. In lifelong learning, line 126, the House recommends increasing adult basic education funding by $1 million each year. Line 127, the House recommends fully funding high school equivalency tests, an increase of $345,000 in each year. Then moving on to the state agency change items, line 137, the administration for the overall voluntary pre-kindergarten program would be $2.584 million in fiscal year 23 and $5.458 million in the tails. The House also recommends changing the criteria for specific learning disabilities. So they recommend funding of this for $540,000 each year. Line 142, The House recommends paying for an educator's online licensing system for Pelsby. This would have a cost of $660,000 in fiscal year 23 and $728,000 in the TALES. The House also recommends two working groups that would require funding for the Legislative Coordinating Commission. On line 152, the House recommends compensatory education working group, funded at $23,000 and $23,000 only. And on line 153, they recommend a special education working group also funded at $23,000 and fiscal year 23. Those are the general fund appropriations. So now moving down to other items that impact the general fund, the House does recommend flexibility for state academies in accessing their rental revenue. This would just have an impact of $3,000 moving away from the general fund and to a special revenue account. So that impact would be $3,000 per year ongoing. Then we move down to special revenue fund changes. Before we do that, I should highlight here the numbers that you see here, the $1.155 billion and $2.12 billion, those align with the targets. Moving down to special revenue fund changes, as you may have seen earlier in the spreadsheet, there were some items that had transfers to the special revenue fund. The House recommends expenditures and revenues out of the special revenue fund for Grow Your Own and the Student Support Personnel Workforce Pipeline. Finally, or almost finally, the House recommends from the restricted special revenue fund, line 189, online learning application fee spending authority. Again, this is just from the restricted special revenue fund, so it doesn't impact the targets. The House recommends funding of $21,000 in fiscal year 22 and $5,000 in fiscal year 23, as well as $3,000 in each of the TALES. And finally, the House recommends an increase in Teachers Retirement Association earnings limitation for those retired teachers during this shortage time of, and this would have an impact on the teachers' retirement fund of roughly $10,000 in fiscal year 23 only. And Madam Chair, that is the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. It looks like Mr. Strom, you are up next with Article 1.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. There's two documents in your packet that we'll use to walk through the language. There's the bill language itself, which is H4300DE1. That's the Delete Everything Amendment to House File 43 that will be in front of the committee this week. And there's a House Research Draft Bill Summary, also labeled as amended by the H4300DE1 amendment. So those two documents are in your packet to help you with the language of the bill itself. I'll start with Article 1, and my colleagues and I will pass the microphone back and forth as we work through the summary and the bill. The amendment is divided into articles, and the first article is Article 1, General Education Revenue. What I'd like to do is group some of the provisions together, and also for those provisions that were part of a previous House file that's gotten a fair amount of hearing in this committee, I'll skim over those if that's okay. Article 1, Section 1 is the conduct of school on certain holidays for the replacing Columbus Day with Indigenous Peoples Day in the K-12 code. That was from the policy bill. Section 2 corresponds to Representative Feist's bill for the access to menstrual products, adding $2 per pupil to the formula. Section 3 was Representative Stanstedt's bill for consolidation transition aid, adjusting the formula amounts up. Section 4 was from the department's bill and authorizes changes the definition of site. And this is in part related to some of the other changes related to supplemental online learning that the committee has heard. And I'll just mention the new provisions with the online learning changes as we get to them. Section 5 is raising the amount of money that a school board member may earn from their own school district from $8,000 to $20,000. This authority is only granted if the board unanimously approves that that the school board member can do that employment with the district. This is often the case for substitute teachers or bus drivers or other roles that a school board member may be performing. Section 6 is the non-public pupil aid provision for elementary school guidance and counseling. The one provision that's different from Representative Erickson's bill, and I see an error on the summary here, is that there's a separate funding mechanism for the tribal contract schools. So apologies for that error on the bill summary. This would authorize elementary school guidance counseling services for non-public students, which is currently just available for secondary students. Sections 7 and 8 also correspond with that provision. Section 9 was a provision heard earlier this month by the regarding transportation agreements. As the committee had a discussion on that, I won't say too much about that. Essentially, the board of the school district and the non-public school can agree to an alternative transportation arrangement that's mutually beneficial to both parties. The next several sections are the online learning approach. As a reminder, the department's proposing to separate out supplemental online learning, which is coursework for less than or up to half of a school day, from the full online learning program. So the language is primarily being changed in the statute to reflect the supplemental nature of online learning. This includes sections 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15. And these were changes that were heard when the bill was heard both in policy and in finance. Section 16 is new to the bill. One provision that was concerning to some was that certain supplemental online learning providers currently use an asynchronous measure of method of instruction. And this provision allows those programs that were using asynchronous instruction prior to the start of the pandemic to continue to do so. Section 17, I see another error on the summary, apologies. The career and technical revenue, the only change being picked up by the House is the transportation services. The change in the percentage remains at 35%. Sections 18, 19, and 20 also accompany this career and technical set of changes. In regard to English learners, in sections 21 and 22, the change is primarily, as MDE recommends, for the students with limited and interrupted formal education. There'll be another change in section 24 when we get to that provision. Section 23 is the school district English language learner revenue provision. There are two changes to the formula, or actually three, I guess. The basic English learner aid, which is at $704 per pupil, often called the initial aid, is increased in fiscal year 23 to $1,000 per pupil. And then both the basic and the concentration EL revenue are linked to future increases in the formula allowance. And then finally, a new provision is added to the formula, which is the cross-subsidy calculation. And cross-subsidy aid is set at 40% of the cross-subsidy in 23, 50% in fiscal 24, 75% in 25, and then 100% of the cross-subsidy is funded in fiscal year 26 and later. Section 24 is the graduation incentives program language. The change, as I mentioned, the department proposes simplifying the definition of students with limited interrupted formal education, or SLIFE. That simplification may impact some of the students who are currently able to extend their schooling for one additional year, under the old definition. So in the graduation incentive program, those categories of students are essentially grandfathered in, even though the definition of the SLIVE students is changing earlier in the bill. The next several sections have to do with the American Indian Aid. We've talked about this in committee before. There's changes to the definitions, trying to align those more carefully, including the definition for the state count that is used in several of the formulas. There's also a change to the American Indian Aid formula. That's the formula that goes to school districts. And currently there's a minimum aid in that formula of $20,000 per participating site that would go to $40,000. Section 29 is a change that's slightly different in structure than what the department proposed. And this has to do with the supplemental online learning. Instead of including the tribal contract students in quite the same way that MDE did, the House bill recommends a modification to this statute to allow the tribal contract students to enroll in a supplemental course. Ms. Beckel pointed out the small fiscal implication to this provision. Sections 30, 31, 32, 33 all have to do with the use of supplemental online learning and online learning for students who are placed in facilities, primarily for care and treatment. These provisions make clear that if the services are provided in an online manner, that the student and the student's family has input into how those decisions are made and agreement from the families. Section 33 is another section relating to online learning students, and it includes in the definition of the tribal contract schools the definition of average daily membership for purposes of calculating online learning aid. Section 34 is the extended time revenue. This is the revenue that pays for primarily for summer school, but also extended hours that are provided on weekends or after the regular instructional day ends. There are two changes. The first is linking to the formula allowance for future increases in the general education formula allowance. And the second is the inclusion of summer program funding for the residential programs, for students in residential programs. Section 35 is a technical change corresponding to the English learner changes. The statute was simplified a bit in terms of how those calculations are made. Section 36 is the funding of $2 per pupil that accompanies the requirement that school districts provide menstrual products to their students. Section 37 still has a blank in it. This is the operating capital levy. As Ms. Beckel mentioned, when the spreadsheet was being discussed, a number of the voluntary pre-kindergarten programs, because they include the four-year-old students as a pupil unit, will have an impact on levies. That impact on levy, in order to hold a zero levy target, means another levy needs to be lowered. The operating capital is the levy that's being lowered in this bill, and the amount will need to be backed into for the equalizing factor that matches the dollars on the spreadsheet. Section 38 is the use of total operating capital. This is, again, the free access to menstrual products provision being added to the acceptable uses of that revenue. Section 39 is the provision related to pupil transportation adjustment. This increases the funding of a district's unfunded transportation costs from 18.2% to 60% of the prior year's funding gap. Section 40 is a change to the building allocation of compensatory revenue. This increases the amount that has to stay at each school site from 50% to 80% of the revenue that's generated by that school site. Section 42 amends amends the shared time provision. As members know, under Minnesota law, a non-public school student may participate in a public school program on a shared time basis. This provision authorizes non-public students to participate in supplemental online learning courses as they do in any other shared time course. Section 43 is a relatively technical change accommodating the new career and technical pupil transportation aid for the transportation of the students to and from certain work sites. Then there are a series of appropriations for the next six sections that match they do two things. They change the underlying forecast base for each of the appropriations, and then they match the policy and funding changes in this article. So you can see those are for general education, consolidation, transition aid. Sections 46 and 47 are the non-public pupil aids. Section 48 is the career and technical aid adjustment. And section 49 is the English learner cross-subsidy adjustment. Finally then, section 50 is the legislative working group on the calculation of compensatory revenue. There's also funding in for this of $23,000. And section 51 is the appropriation of declining pupil unit aid. There's a one-time provision based on enrollment that provides an additional $25 million to school districts that lost enrollment between the fall of 2020 and the fall of 2021. That $25 million is a one-time payment in addition to the regular declining pupil aid provision that's part of general education revenue. And subdivision in section 52, there's a repealer, and I see on the summary that this obsolete language was so important that I mentioned we're repealing it twice. So apologies for that mistake. So it's in the career and technical program, there's an obsolete section, a subdivision, and that's the repeal. Madam Chair, that's the sum of Article 1's changes.
Mr. Strom, thank you for that very thorough walkthrough. Ms. Pera, it looks like you have articles possibly 2, 3, and 4. Why don't you go ahead and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, I'll be walking you through articles 2, 3, and 4. And much of this is from the policy bill that the committee heard recently. So I'll walk through those items a little bit higher level than the other ones, and I'll point those out. So article 2 is education excellence. And sections 1 through 9 are identical to what was in the policy bill. These relate to disclosure of educational data to tribal nations about tribal enrolled students, compulsory instruction requiring ethnic studies, making art standards a state standard, requiring education records to include pupil withdrawal agreements, requiring the commissioner to consider advice from additional stakeholders when revising academic standards and clarifying the commissioner's authority to amend rules for academic standards. Also requiring Indigenous education standards be included in academic standards as well as ethnic studies, and requiring districts to review its career and technical education standard. Section 10 was in the policy bill, but has a couple of changes here. It adds ethnic studies within the social studies credits, and that's for students beginning ninth grade in the 24-25 school year, and also allowing the personal finance half credit to satisfy social studies credit, career technical education credit, or credit another credit requirement as determined by the local school board. Section 11 was in the policy bill, and that refers to career technical education. Section 12 is just slightly different from what was in the policy bill in that the paragraph is broken up a little bit differently there. But that definition is then used in section 13 in the ethnic studies requirement. So that requires a student beginning ninth grade in the 24-25 school year and later to complete a semester-long ethnic studies course to graduate from high school. And that would not increase the number of credits required for graduation. It requires the commissioner to adopt rules for state standards for ethnic studies curriculum, requires a district or charter school to conduct an ethnic needs assessment with students, parents, and community members. requires the department to hire sufficient staff to carry out certain specified duties, including monitoring school districts and charter school implementation of ethnic studies courses, and requires the department to encourage districts and charter schools to use the model ethnic studies curriculum that the Ethnic Studies Task Force identifies, and that'll be a later section. Section 14 was from the policy bill. Sections 15 through 18 were also in the policy bill. These amend the world's best workforce requirements, and the definition for ethnic studies that you see here just refers back to the one I mentioned in section 12 rather than being written out here. Section 19 is the also from the policy bill, closing educational opportunity gaps grants. Section 20 modifies the goal of the literacy aid program to require evidence-based reading instruction through a multi-tiered system of support by 2027. Instruction has to be focused on reading skills of phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, oral language, and both vocabulary and reading comprehension. Schools have to assess students in kindergarten through grade two who have not yet demonstrated mastery of foundational reading skills using an MDE-approved screening tool and share that data with MDE. It requires districts to support their screening data to MDE twice a year, and schools have to notify parents if the students are not reading at grade level on a quarterly basis about their students' progress. Reading intervention methods must be taught by a certified or licensed reading specialist, and schools have to develop a personal learning plan for each kindergarten to grade three student not reading at grade three level. Clarifies that districts have to provide appropriate and necessary staff development to early childhood educators based in the science of reading. Requires schools through their literacy incentive aid to offer training and provide ongoing coaching in the science of reading using an MDE approved program to all kindergarten to grade three teachers and support staff by July 1, 2027. Requires a local literacy plan to use the MDE template, including multi-tiered systems of support, screening students for dyslexia, and other components. It requires the commissioner to provide a menu of state-approved assessment tools and provide opportunities for teachers to be trained in the science of reading. Sections 21 to 43 are all from the policy bill. These relate to gifted and talented programming, statewide testing and reporting, the demographic categories used for reporting. Section 27 prohibits American Indian mascots unless there's approval from the Tribal Nations Education Committee and the Indian Affairs Council. Section 28 defines the multi-tiered systems of support. Sections 29 through 43 all modify student discipline. They define non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices and require those. Define a pupil withdrawal agreement and requires those to be reported. Prohibits dismissal of a student in kindergarten through grade three unless non-exclusionary discipline measures have been exhausted and there's an ongoing serious safety threat to the child or others. Other changes to procedures relating to student dismissal, requiring alternative education services, opportunities to complete work assigned during a suspension, modifying the written notice requirements when a student would be excluded or expelled, modifying the requirements for admission or readmission plan, and requiring other policies, including a policy to file a complaint regarding the application of discipline policies and seek corrective action. Section 44 reflects the change in the amendment that was adopted in committee. Defines recess detention. So previously that section prohibited recess detention. Now it is defined. Districts and charter schools are encouraged to ensure student access to structured breaks. Requires that parents be notified when recess detention is used, and requires districts and charter schools to compile information on recess detention use. It also prohibits withholding or excessively delaying student participation in scheduled mealtimes and limits when recess detention may be used. Section 45 relates to reading instruction. It replaces the term balanced instruction in regard to scientifically based reading instruction with explicit systematic instruction, and states that scientifically based instruction occurs within a multi-tiered system of support framework. Defines phonic instruction and foundational reading skills, requires grade level mastery of foundational reading skills for students in kindergarten through grade two. States struggling readers in grade three and higher who demonstrate deficits in foundational reading may require explicit systematic instruction. Defines multi-tiered system of support and requires districts and charter schools to transition away from instruction that uses either visual memory as a primary basis for teaching word recognition, but that uses a meaning, structure, and syntax and visual cueing system. Sections 46 through 50 were all from the policy bill, and these relate to the Post-Secondary Enrollment Options Act, PSEO, prohibiting a post-secondary institution participating in PSEO from requiring a faith statement for a student during the application process or basing a student or basing an admission decision on the student's race, creed, ethnicity, and certain other characteristics. It eliminates the what's known as the gag rule. So those are limits on when a post-secondary institution can provide information to students and parents, advertise, recruit, or solicit students to enroll in courses. Also changes relating to a grade point average weighting policy and the time for a student to withdraw from a course. Section 51 establishes an online learning program fee administration account and a special revenue fund in the state treasury, and requires the current online learning program fees to be placed in the accounts and annually appropriates the money from the account to the commissioner for costs associated with the online digital learning programs. Section 52 on the learning year program was from the policy bill. Section 53 modifies the existing after-school community learning program grant language. It requires grant programs to offer a broad array of academic enrichment activities, authorizes the commissioner to award grants to community or nonprofit organizations, American Indian organizations, tribal nations, political subdivisions, libraries, or school-based programs operating during non-school hours, refines the program objectives, modifies that grant application requirements, requires the commissioner to prioritize grants to applicants intending to serve low-income and underserved students, and to equitably award grants to programs in rural, suburban, and urban communities. Sections 54 to 63 are all from the policy bill, and these relate to the American Indian Education Program, limiting enrollment in those programs on a shared time basis to American Indian children, clarifying the purpose of the programs, requirements for districts on staffing, and culture and language classes, modifying the parent and community participation committee, including eligibility for membership in the committee and the committee's vote of concurrence or non-concurrence with offerings extended to American Indian students, modifies the duties of the American Indian Education Director. 61 requires, also from a policy bill, it requires a district or charter school to allow a student, American Indian student, to wear American Indian regalia, tribal regalia, or objects of cultural significance, graduation ceremonies. Section 62 and 63 clarify references related to the American Indian Education Program. Section 64, American Indian Education Aid, that increases the minimum amount of aid for each district with an American Indian Education Program from $20,000 to $40,000 for fiscal years 23 and later. Links the American Indian Education Formula allowance of $358 per qualifying student and minimum aid amount to the growth in the general education basic formula allowance for fiscal years 24 and later, and also clarifies that charter schools are eligible for American Indian aid. Section 65 strikes pilot from a description. Section 66 increases the amount of aid to tribal contract or grant schools. Section 67 modifies achievement integration plan requirements. Section 68 requires literacy incentive aid to be used to train pre-kindergarten through grade three teachers and support staff in the science of reading by July 1, 2027. Hire a licensed reading and dyslexia specialist trained in the science of reading. for an identified or unidentified underperforming school, hire a literacy coach trained in the science of reading to support teachers and implement multi-tiered systems of support, and provide materials, training, and coaching to ensure alternate instruction is based in science of reading. Section 69 through 72 relate to restrictive procedures. Currently, those apply. Those procedures requirements apply only to students with disabilities. Those sections will broaden that to be all students. Also then broadens the role of an oversight committee and what that committee has to do. Modifies the meeting requirements and requires a debrief process. Section 73 allows American Indian students to carry a medicine pouch containing loose tobacco for observance of traditional spiritual or cultural practices. Sections 74 through 79 modified the appropriations from last year for several programs. Those are to correct for forecast changes and also to reflect other changes. So Section 74 is the Achievement and Integration Aid. You'll also see American Indian Education Aid, and that increases the fiscal year 23 appropriation to fund the enhanced site minimum level of funding in the article. There's also charter school building lease aid, current enrollment aid. The base for that is increased for fiscal years 24 and 25. The base is increased for Minnesota Math Corps. And there's an adjustment also for tribal contract school aid. Section 80 requires schools to participate in national assessment of educational progress if asked to do so. Section 81 is the Ethnic Studies Task Force, and that's established to advise the commissioner on ethnic studies standards, curriculum, and resources necessary to implement the ethnic studies requirements. Their duties include developing standards to propose for adoption and to identify a model curriculum. And the commissioner is required to adopt those standards using the expedited rulemaking process. Section 82 requires the commissioner to convene a task force to advise the commissioner on development of a computer science educational foundational blueprint. The requirements of the blueprint are listed there. The commissioner has to submit blueprint to the legislature by January 31, 2023. Section 83 is the appropriations, and 84 and 85 are advisor instruction and the repealer. Article 3. Article 3 is the teacher's article, and sections 1 through 9 are from the policy bill. These relate to setting a goal to increase the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. Prohibiting discrimination or discipline for a teacher or principal that incorporates into the curriculum contributions by persons in that protected class, modifying the definition of shortage area and the reporting that PELSB does in the teacher supply and demand report, requiring mental illness training for school administrators who are renewing their license, allowing tier one teachers to be in the same bargaining unit as other teachers, modifying the requirements for a tier three and tier four license, and also for licensure assessments. Section 10 requires PELSB to adopt rules requiring a teacher renewing a teaching license to demonstrate professional development in the cultural heritage and contemporary contributions of American Indians with emphasis on Minnesota tribal nations. And that effective date is pushed out a year to July 1, 2023. Sections 11 through 16 are the same as the policy bill relating to teacher contracts or teacher terminations, having those be required, be reported to the commissioner, modifying the probationary period. Sections 13 and 15 are the same as what was in the policy bill, except that the effective date is pushed out a year to July 1, 2023, and those relate to teacher evaluations. Section 17 increases the statewide basic alternative teacher compensation aid, more commonly known as QCOMP. So it increases that cap, so all sites currently participating in the program are funded at the full formula amount. Section 18 requires QCOMP revenue to be used for the purposes in the school's QCOMP plan, and no more than 5% of that can be used on administrative costs. Section 19 requires a district or charter school to place its QCOMP revenue in a reserved account that can only be used for QCOMP programming. Section 20 is the preparation time statute. This requires collective bargaining agreements for teachers to include provisions of due process for due process forms and procedures. It sets the initial aid amount for districts and charter schools at $19 per adjusted pupil units for the current fiscal year, and for intermediate districts and cooperative units at $375 per pupil year. If the district and the school's representative teachers can't agree on language for how that revenue is to be spent, then the agreement would include by default a provision giving those special education teachers an additional 20 hours of pay time for due process forms and procedures, sort of applying the 22-23 school year. And charter schools would be eligible for this revenue if the teachers in the school have an exclusive representative for purposes of collective bargaining. Section 21 is known as CUGMEC, the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color Grant Program, and that's modifying how the grant is administered by Pelsby. That was from the policy bill, as was Section 22 on teacher mentorship grant funds. Section 23 clarifies the language of the concurrent enrollment teacher partnership and consolidates that language of the Northwest partnership and the statewide program. It establishes the Lakes Country Service Co-op as the fiscal host for the partnership and declares going forward the concurrent enrollment teacher partnership may provide funding for course development in applicable post-secondary subject areas, work with districts to develop incentives for teachers to participate, enroll college faculty as space permits, and provide financial assistance if state aid remains available. Section 24 modifies principal evaluations. Section 25 requires collective bargaining over class sizes in school districts and charter schools, student testing, and student to personnel ratios in school districts. Sections 26 through 31 modify the appropriations that were passed last year. Some of these are to, again, reflect the forecast adjustments and other changes. So you have an increased appropriation for fiscal year 23 for a concurrent enrollment teacher training program, Grow Your Own. Non-exclusionary discipline last year had funding for fiscal year 22 only, so this adds funding for fiscal year 23. Increasing funding for the expanded concurrent enrollment grants and adjusting the appropriation for QCOMP and also increasing the appropriation for the CUGMEC program. Section 32 is the teacher supply and demand report and saying what the 2023 report must include. Section 33 temporarily increases the earnings limit maximum prior to deferral for a retired teacher collecting a TRA pension from it's currently $46,000 per year, and that would go up to $92,000 for fiscal years 23, 24, and 25. Section 34 is the appropriations. And Article 4 is all identical to what was in the policy bill, except for Section 1, the definitions of charter management organization and education management organization. The last or was changed to an and, so that narrows the entities that would qualify as either a charter management organization or education management organization. Otherwise, the article modifies or clarifies the statutes that charter schools have to comply with as if they were districts, including Alternative Suspension, Education for Learners Act. It modifies the withdrawal, the authorizer requirements. It requires market need and demand studies at several stages, including for an authorizer applying, for some organization applying to be an authorizer, if there's an application to add grades or primary enrollment sites. Requires a charter school to lease space from the owner of a space rather than subleasing a space, modifying the admissions requirements for a charter school, including for a charter school that serves at least 90% of enrolled students who are eligible for special education services and have a primary disability of deaf, hard of hearing, or deafblind, the school will be able to give those students an enrollment preference if they have that same primary disability, but would not be able to limit admission based on the child's eligibility for other special education services. Madam Chair, I will turn it back to Mr. Strom.
Ms. Pera, thank you for that very thorough walkthrough. Mr. Strom, Article 5.
Madam Chair, members, Article 5 is the special education article. There are just a few provisions in this article. Section 1 is the provision allowing certified deaf interpreters to qualify as an essential personnel when providing services to students that would roll into the special education reimbursement formula. And because special education is primarily based on the costs in the previous year, the costs are essentially lagging, or the revenue rather is lagging. So the effect on the spreadsheet that you saw from Ms. Beckel shows that service beginning in 23 and the reimbursement through the special ed formula starting in fiscal 24. Section 2 increases the age for 1 year only for the students with a disability who are participating in transition programs. This is combined with the department's recommendation to change the way the service for the special education students ages 18 to 21. The department proposed a clearer definition of that keying off the 22nd birthday. What this language does is say that the student then can participate in fiscal 23, the 22-23 school year, for one additional year if necessary. Section 3 has to do with the paraprofessional aid that this committee heard this year and last. This authorizes the training for the students and requires at least 20 hours of paid orientation. Section 4 establishes the reimbursement formula for this. This is a formula based on the number of paraprofessionals employed by the district in the previous year, and the formula is set at $196 times that count of paraprofessionals in the previous year. Section 5 is the change to the special education cross-subsidy. Currently, the state's formula provides 6.43% of the cross-subsidy to be reimbursed. This increase to 55% would reimburse at 55% the amount of each district's special education cross-subsidy beginning in fiscal year 23 and each year thereafter. Section 6 is a small technical change. Section 7 adjusts the special education aid amounts to match the new formula for special education, primarily the change in the cross-subsidy percentage. Section 8 is a legislative working group task force. This provision was heard earlier by the committees and would address the issue and look at the issue of how tuition billing amongst school districts and between cooperative units and school districts and charter schools and school districts works. There's a $23,000 appropriation to the LCC for coordinating and providing the per diems for the members participating in this working group. Section 9 is the provision from MDE's bill requiring the start of a process to redo the specific learning disability rulemaking. There's an appropriation when we get to the department's budget. The costs associated with this and the task force activities are a line item on the department budget. Finally, then, Section 10 appropriates funds for the paraprofessional aid that was mentioned earlier, and Section 11 is the appropriation for the legislative work group. Spera can walk you through Article 6, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Ms. Spera, Article 6, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Article 6 is the health and safety article. Sections 1 through 6 are from the policy bill. These encourage districts and charter schools to provide substance misuse awareness and prevention instruction. They modified the student bullying policy that's in statute. Defines malicious and sadistic conduct and requires school boards to prohibit such conduct involving race, religion, disability, sexual harassment, sexual orientation, sexual exploitation by a district or staff member or student against another staff member or student. Requiring schools to put up posters with the child abuse hotline number. Section 6 on the opiate antagonist reflects the amendment that was adopted in committee. That was previously a requirement for districts and charter schools to maintain a supply that's now permissive language. Section 7, mental health screening. When the committee heard the bill requiring mental health screening, making that contingent on a certain type of funding for student mental health support, that was also included. The language now on the screening, all the requirements regarding parent notice, use of the data, commissioner assistance, et cetera, those are all the same, except that it's now contingent on a different type of funding that I'll walk through in the next section. That is the, what you see in section 8 is the student support personnel aid. So that creates a new ongoing state aid program to help fund additional school support personnel, which are defined as school counselors, school psychologists, school social workers, school nurses, and chemical dependency counselors. The initial aid amount is set at $100 times the number of adjusted pupil units enrolled in the district or charter school during the current year. For small districts, there's a guaranteed minimum of $50,000. There's a separate category of aid for intermediate school districts and other cooperative units, and that's set equal to $6 per enrollee in the member school district. The district can contract for services with the money if unable to hire a new full-time employee. There's also an account in the Special Revenue Fund to develop a student support personnel workforce pipeline and reporting requirements to the commissioner. So districts have to report on the impact of the funds and how the money has affected at least two of, there's a list there of certain measures, including school climate, career and college readiness, et cetera. Section 9 establishes two comprehensive school mental health leads and their duties at the Department of Education. One lead would address mental health needs in students and the other the needs of staff. It requires the leads to help schools upon request to assess their comprehensive school mental health systems and develop improvement plans. To implement evidence-based mental health resources, tools, and practices, establish a clearinghouse with information and resources, and work with schools to improve mental health infrastructure support. Allows the leads to report to the legislature as necessary, and requires the leads to consult with named state agencies or offices or other agencies to identify or develop information, training, and resources to help districts support students, teachers, and school staff's mental health needs. Section 10 is the appropriations. So I'll turn it back to Mr. Strom now.
Thank you, Ms. Spera. Mr. Strom, Articles 7 and 8.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Article 7 is the facilities article. Section 1 is, again, an error on the bill summary. My apologies. I'm so sorry, Madam Chair. Section 1 is the long-term facilities maintenance revenue. Under current law, each school district's revenue is $380 per pupil. And then this revenue, if the district's average age of its buildings is less than 35 years old, is reduced by its age index. This provision eliminates the age index so that if a school district replaces facilities but keeps old facilities in use as well, that the school district does not see a reduction in its long-term facilities maintenance revenue. So Section 1, essentially, the main change is the elimination of the age index. There is a cost to this that's being carried on Ms. Beckel's spreadsheet. And as a result, to keep the, because long-term facilities maintenance revenue is a mix of aid and levy, to keep the levy unchanged, there will be an adjustment to the equalizing factor in the program, which is currently set at 123% of the state average. That equalizing factor will have to go up just a bit to reduce the levy impact so that there will be a neutral levy impact. Section two is simply the appropriation, adjusting it to match the the February 22 forecast estimate of the cost of that program. Section three is the fund transfer for the Burnsville Egan Savage School District. It allows the building, the district to transfer certain building lease amounts and sale proceeds from the accounts they would otherwise be in once that debt service has been satisfied to the district's general fund. And section four, Madam Chair, the last of the sections in Article 7 is the authority for the Eastern Carver County School Districts to use the building lease for purposes of constructing a pupil transportation hub, the essentially a bus garage maintenance facility in Sturbridge area. Madam Chair, members, Article 8 is the nutrition and libraries article. The first section establishes a new category of school meals aid for those districts required to participate in the community eligibility provision program. This is a federal program that allows a school district or a school site participating in the lunch program that serves more than 40% free and reduced lunch eligible pupils to have all of its students receive free meals. There are savings to the district on the administrative end when this happens and other issues involved as well. However, for districts that are below 62% of free and reduced lunch count, there would be a loss of federal revenue for them if a loss of school revenue from the parents for those students who aren't otherwise eligible. So what this provision does is fills in behind that. The provision requires an eligible site to participate in the program and then fully funds that eligible site. In addition, there's, and this language is in the appropriation as well, there's grant money available for other sites that are not required to participate in the CEP program to do so. Section two are the changes to the summer food service program and child and adult care food program that MDE brought forth in their bill. Section three is from the policy bill requiring school library and media centers to have a list of characteristics. Section four is the adjustment to compensatory revenue that was discussed when the fiscal worksheets were walked through. Essentially what this provision does is that it allows compensatory revenue to be calculated in a couple of different manners depending on and varies the percentage of eligible students. The CEP program is thought to reduce student likelihood of returning the free and reduced lunch forms, and this provision essentially says that a district that's participating in the CEP program can have its revenue calculated based on the 2019 levels or the year prior to the district's entry in CEP or on the percentages that occurred during the regular cycle, which is the previous year. It's expected that there won't be a fiscal impact for 24 and 25 for this provision because one of the changes MDE made over the interim was to seek approval from the department, the U.S. Department of Agriculture for purposes of using the state's medical assistance eligibility as an additional match requirement. The match currently that's done, which is referred to as the direct match for food service, is based on SNAP and TANF and a few other programs. Adding medical assistance as another match category is likely to increase the number of reported eligible families. And as a result, the expectation is that the compensation adjustment in Section 4 will only be necessary for fiscal 23. Section 5 substitutes the word resident for citizen in the library services provision. Section 6 is a technical change. Section 7 changes a phrase from Spanish speakers to English language learners in the library grants program language. And then the next couple of sections have to do with the regional library system. The first changes a reference, just makes clear what level of a minimum participation a library needs to have to participate in the regional program. There's no policy change here. It's a clarification of the statute. Sections 9 and 10, 11 go to the changes that the regional library system would like to see made in terms of how their funds are distributed to the 12 regional systems. The 12 systems are all in agreement on this change, and coupled with the $2 million per year increase in the appropriation, this results in a slightly different distribution of funding amongst the 12 regional library systems. Section 11 is a technical change to the population count that's used in the regional library formula. Sections 12 and 13 adjust the appropriations for school meals for the state assistance, breakfast and lunch to reflect the February forecast level. And then once that level's reflected, then the policy change for the voluntary pre-kindergarten programs are added as well. Section 14 is the change to the regional library system grants, the $2 million entitlement increase per year beginning in 23. Section 15 is the provision that funds both the required CEP eligibility for all of the eligible sites, and then also provides additional grants to any school districts that would like to provide free meals to their students. The overall appropriation is capped at $18.4 million in 23, so the grants would be prioritized for the non-CEP required participants. Finally, Section 16 is a reviser instruction to replace references related to free and reduced price lunch and breakfast, where they appear throughout statute, with the phrase free and reduced price meals. Madam Chair, members, that's Article 8.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Up next, I think we have Ms. Mock to walk us through Article 9.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll walk through Article 9, which is the early education article. Most of the provisions in this article relate to the establishment of the mixed delivery voluntary pre-kindergarten program for eligible four-year-old children, and the committee heard that proposal last Friday. The first two sections of Article 9 make conforming changes related to the establishment of that BPK program. Section 3 increases the amount the state pays a school district for each child who receives developmental screening prior to or soon after starting kindergarten. Section 4 establishes the mixed delivery BPK program. The section specifies requirements with which the programs have to comply, describes how the programs are funded, and defines an eligible child for purposes of the program, among other provisions. Section 5 makes kindergarten students with and without disabilities count the same in terms of ADM. Section 5 also includes conforming changes related to the BPK program. Section 6 also makes conforming changes related to the BPK program. Section 7 excludes BPK pupil units from the calculation of declining enrollment revenue in fiscal year 2023 only. This is also related to the establishment of the program. Section 8 allows MDE in fiscal year 2023 only to allocate early learning scholarship money to Head Start programs and child care programs to implement a transition year for the BPK program. Section 9 appropriates money for the increased state aid for developmental screening. Section 10 provides that fiscal year serves as a transition year for current voluntary pre-kindergarten school readiness plus and scholarship pathway 2 programs to transition to the new form of the VPK program. Section 11 appropriates $96.9 million in fiscal year 2023 to MDE for the VPK programs provided by Head Start and child care programs. And Section 12 repeals two subdivisions of current VPK statute that are obsolete under the new VPK program. That's Article 9.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. Mr. Strom, it looks like you get to take us across the finish lines with Articles 10, 11, and 12.
Chair Sandstead, I think actually we're gonna just wrap. We're at time at this point and pick up tomorrow.
Okay, very good. So with that, members, we will adjourn until tomorrow. This meeting is adjourned.